Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Morning show, first at 5-9 at The Fan. Last time we talked to this guy, I said, have fun in Montreal. And we can get an update if he did. It looked like quite the time. This insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Frank Cervelli, NHL insider and president of hockey content at DailyFaceoff.com. How was Montreal, Frank?
Dailish, fun was definitely had. A lot of stuff to do, lots going on. But in the end, I can tell you this, going to the airport on Saturday morning after it all wrapped up, there were a lot of people throughout the hockey world that just had their heads down, were absolutely hurting.
Yeah. Big fan of that. You got to blame the sun. I was talking about this with Matthew Barnaby yesterday. When we were doing his podcast, I was like, you got to blame the sun in the summertime on why you're so hungover, not your inability to hold your booze. So the Leafs grab Matt Murray, and we've been obviously breaking it down all day and looking at it from every angle. I'll just start with this. Was there anything about it that surprised you?
I mean, the only surprise for me is that sort of how the process played out. And clearly the Leafs had tried on a number of different fronts, and that basically this is their read of the market, is that different chairs are spoken for, whether it's Darcy Kemper or Jack Campbell, and other options on the trade front may or may not have been there, including John Gibson. You saw the quote from his agent. I don't think they were necessarily planning on it going down this way, but this is the spot that they were in, and this was the option that they had at the moment, and they couldn't be in a spot where they continued on any further and didn't have anyone. So they check at least one box right now with Matt Murray. Now let's see what they do with the other option that they have in net.
So where do they go then with the other option in net? Because I think the thing that surprises most people is the salary retention, right? Because a lot of people saw that Buffalo was willing to retain 25% of the salary and that Ottawa was going to drop down like a few picks very, very high in the NHL draft. And you kind of looked at that and went, well, they nixed the deal, but Toronto was in a very different salary cap position than Buffalo was. Everyone kind of thought, like, hey, they're going to try to make Pierre Dorion eat 50% of this deal. That's what this is going to come down to. That's what these discussions are all about. And, like, what room do you have left over now with, like, I think it's a little over $6 million before you do the Sandin deal, before you do Engvall, or you do any other kind of, like, trimming to your roster. But where do you expect them to go next with their goaltenders?
Yeah, I mean, that's the interesting question. Like, you would think that given those cap constraints, that they're probably limited in what they can spend to somewhere around $1.5 million, $2 million. And I don't know who exactly is in that range. I think ideally you'd try and target someone like an Ilya Samsonov, one of the real surprises of the non-qualified players on Monday. But the reason the Caps didn't qualify Samsonov is because they saw him in the $3 to $3.5 million range. And I think that's probably a bit too much for the Leafs to be able to afford at this point. So then what? I don't know. That's the spot that they're in at the moment, that they've got to figure out who exactly is in that price range.
Yeah, so the next part of this is, I think everyone gets to judge this a little bit differently once these contracts for the other two goaltenders are done. And it seems like, again, like you said, the chairs were spoken for, right? Jack already seemed to have a deal in place with Edmonton, and seems like Kemper was the apple of the eye for Washington. This is going to be kind of a two-parter. One is, if the Leafs off the table as a landing spot for a goaltender, how could this not have a material impact on the goaltending market moving forward here? Like, I got to feel like if I'm Washington and Edmonton, I'm looking at these negotiations with these two goaltenders a little differently, saying, okay, well, what situations are you walking into where it's competitive and we can pay you even close to this? Like, I would think that this was actually kind of a coup for the teams that are around the Toronto Maple Leafs, like those other two teams. And secondarily, yeah, where do you think those numbers in term are going to come in on? Because I think that's what is really going to make this the, you know, the final judgment for a lot of Leafs fans who wondered why they wouldn't be in on the other two.
I mean, it's hard to say exactly what those numbers might be because, wink, wink, you're not allowed to engage in those types of conversations.
But you've heard. Come on. You've heard.
I think the general speculation is that both those goalies are in and around or north of the $5 to $5.5 million range times 5 years. So that's – I mean, look – the clear answer to that is the Toronto Maple Leafs had a long period of time, 5 to 6, maybe more weeks. If you even go back to, if you want to go back to the regular season to get a deal done with Jack Campbell, They didn't, he wasn't, or didn't appear to be their guy. And I think in some ways this mirrors a little bit of what happened with Zach Hyman last year in that, they really liked Zach Hyman. A period of time went on where they didn't engage because they thought he might be too expensive. I think that's what they thought with Jack Campbell. Ideally, they probably didn't want to be in that $5 to $5.5 million range for Jack Campbell. And then when push came to shove, they're like, oh, man, we're losing this guy. We better hurry up and circle back. It seemed to be too late. And so that happened in the final throes before free agency last year with Zach Hyman. And it seems like that's going to be the case again this year with Jack Campbell.
Was ever getting Marc-Andre Fleury a possibility? Like, were they close? Was this a pipe dream that we just got excited about because he seemed to be a really great fit? Or was he gone basically this whole time?
I think it was something that was certainly a consideration. And whatever reporting was out there that Marc-Andre Fleury had no interest in playing in Toronto or had nixed the idea of it last spring during the trade deadline, I think that was always overblown. I think when it came down to it and these chairs started to fill up in a hurry and you saw Colorado make the decision to go with Alexander Georgiev, that's when I think Marc-Andre Fleury jumped into gear saying, hey, I actually really liked the situation in Minnesota before they go and move on to their next guy on their list. Maybe I should just get a deal done there. And so never really got to the point where, it was an option for the Leafs. And I think in this case, you know, my guess is that wherever he ended up, he was always kind of looking at the same type of deal, a multi-year deal in the mid threes, whether it was in Colorado, whether it was in Minnesota, Toronto, Washington, wherever it was, it clearly kind of came down to pecking order. And the way I always viewed it from the Fleury perspective was Colorado was his first destination or first choice. Minnesota was second, Toronto third, and Washington and whoever else fourth and fifth.
Sorry, I didn't know if I cut you off there.
No, I'm not.
Perfect. Okay, sorry. So they do have this option, I guess, with Matt Murray, whether you think he's a number one or not, that's where they're at. So they have this small pocket of money remaining. Whether they go in on Samsonov or not, what do you think that they're going to use what they have left to kind of distribute with the options that they need to do come free agency?
Well, a small chunk of that, you know, probably $1 million, $1.25 million, $1.4 million, whatever it ends up being, is probably going to be the Sandin deal that you guys had mentioned. Clearly qualifying Engvall, he's a player that they have not only interest in, but see a future in, given really what he brought to that line defensively and all the other aspects that are, you know, and elements of his game that are a bit different than anyone else. Obviously, when you're in the spot, Mikheyev is going to be too expensive. They really need a fourth line piece, I think, to this point. Colin Blackwell is too expensive, given what he might be able to get. So they're looking kind of in that $750 to $1 million range for another fourth line piece. But a big chunk of that, if you called it $6 million, 6.3 is probably going to be chewed up by a goaltender. The question is how much, and how do you end up filling out this group? Because there just isn't a lot to go around. What would make it a lot easier if you were able to move Justin Hall today, in order to try and, you know, free up just a little bit more space so that you could maybe more properly slot in a defenseman in that, you know, sort of six, seven spot at $1.25 million less than that. That would give you some kind of opportunity or chance to maybe get someone like Samsonov, who has a bit of pedigree as a first round pick. And, you know, really when you look at how fickle the position is, who's to say that he can't continue to grow into a significant role in the NHL?
No, totally. And listen, if they go that route and they free up that space and they make this more of a tandem, I think that there's a lot of that makes a lot of sense. I do wonder, though, if they just maybe continue to explore the trade market, because, and like, this is again going to be a bit of a two-part question here, but a guy like Cam Talbot is still out there, right? And he struggled in the back half of the season last year. You know, his goals saved above expected really fell off a cliff. I think he's 35 years old, but he's only 1 year left at, you know, I think it's $3 million per season. There's still like the idea that there's be like a James Reimer potential out there, considering that he's on an expiring contract. Do you think guys like that are going to still command a pretty hefty price tag for their teams to move off them? Because I would think that given the goaltending market, that maybe there would be even other teams that would look at their goaltending situation and say, hey, maybe we should at least explore the potential of moving off of somebody, given what the prices are right now, given the fact that, yeah, like a team was actually willing to take on 2 years of a goaltender that played, you know, 40-something games over the last 2 years and just coming off a concussion and a sub-900 save, that they were happily willing to pay him like $4.6 million. I think that's got to tell you something about the market, no?
Well, it does, yeah. It speaks to the scarcity of impact goalies, guys that you can trust and hang your hat on.
Right.
I would say with Cam Talbot, he's not moving. I mean, Billy Guerin, their GM, made it abundantly clear with his quote on the draft floor as day two wrap.
Yeah,
I don't have to
quote.
Do bleep. It was, you know, one of the quotes of the year, and there's been a handful of them.
That's a good quote.
Cam Talbot is not looking for a trade. He's looking for an extension. And part of his misery there in Minnesota is that his issue is he doesn't like that Marc-Andre Fleury is making more money than him this year and is looking for a payday. So they don't have to act. It would be incorrect to say that Cam Talbot is looking for a trade. Clearly, they bought out their drama last year, so that's why they have those big cap hits in Suter and Parise. They're not looking for more, but there are a number of teams, San Jose included. I think their preference is to keep James Reimer. I think if they were going to move off of one, it would be one of the other two, in either Aiden Hill or Kaapo Kähkönen. And I think their secondary preference would be to keep Kähkönen, making Hill potentially available. But I've got my list of teams that are looking for backup goalies here. Toronto is just one of many.
Yeah, long.
The New York Rangers, Washington Capitals, Philadelphia Flyers, since Ivan Fedotov is locked up in Russia. The St. Louis Blues, Chicago Blackhawks are looking for another one. The Buffalo Sabres are still looking for a starter. Like, the Leafs are in the hunt with a whole different group of teams that still need another goalie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which again is why, I don't know, this just always feels like a time where if I'm certain teams, like maybe you don't want to give up your goaltending depth. Maybe you don't want to take a step back, but I do wonder like what an asset you'd be able to bring back. Like, yeah, again, Minnesota with a Cam Talbot, if you were willing to move him, or, the LA Kings when it comes to whether or not they'd be willing to maybe like end the relationship with Jonathan Quick, who's 35 years old, right? And, yeah, I think still a serviceable player. I wonder if teams like that will start to enter the mix a little bit if other teams come at them with serious offers or are willing to entertain that. Okay. So, yeah, sorry,
I was
going
to say, just to wrap that up, I think at the end of the day, there's a limit in terms of what assets teams are willing to pay to get their hands on
guys like
what
that.
Other teams view as, substandard goalies that could be on the move. It's, you're looking at generally more or less mid-round picks, and it's not necessarily significant enough to upset what you have and leave yourself potentially at risk.
Okay, so the last Leafs one for me is, I know that, you know, you've said before that it seemed like they're really only kind of like actively shopping Hall, or he's the name that keeps percolating around. But if we're talking about ways the Leafs could add cap space, and if they're talking about like adding flexibility, Alex Kerfoot is still a name. Like, it's $3.5 million in an expiring deal. Do you think that there is a market for Kerfoot, and have you started to hear his name as we get closer to this thing? Because again, $6 million in space right now, even if you take off the two guys that are making the veteran minimums-ish that you can bury in the Marlies with Simmons and Kerfoot, or sorry, Simmons and Clifford, there's a lot of roster adjustment to be doing with like a little under $8 million.
Yeah, I would call it roster manipulation is what they would be able to do. With Kerfoot, is there a market? 100%. They could move him today quite easily. I think the number of teams that would be interested would be pretty significant. But when you look at Alex Kerfoot, his production last year, 51 points, played all 82 games. Some might look at that and say, at $3.5 million and where he slots in your lineup, he's a luxury that you can't afford. I would argue that he's a player that's exceeding what he's earning, and in terms of production, that you'd have to keep someone like him to squeeze as much out of him as you can in this last year before he's then due a much bigger raise. So, you know, probably ends up being in a situation not all that dissimilar to Ilya Mikheyev, where had another year this year, you likely knew he's heading towards free agency, wouldn't be able to pay to keep him. And in the meantime, you know, you milk what you can, given that his production is exceeding what he's getting paid. So you need players like that if you're the Leafs. Because if he were to hit the market right now, Kerfoot's looking at somewhere in the $5 million range as opposed to $3.5 million.
I wish him the best of luck in that. Okay. What do you think the market is right now for Nazem Kadri? Where does it stand for Nazem Kadri as of today?
It's somewhere in the eights. It's significant. It is a massive, massive number. I'm told that the interest in Nazem Kadri is going to be significant. I mean, this is a whole number of teams that have been watching Kadri, his production, his season, and really just what he showed in the playoffs. That grit, the ability to come back, the complete nature of his game that's continued to grow, and his heart. Like, you know, seeing those quotes, seeing his energy on the ice after the win, teams love that. And he's looking at an enormous payday, and really for a guy that's worked to earn everything that he's gotten, this is going to be a watershed moment for Nazem Kadri in his career to really put a feather in his cap and cement him, you know, in a different stratosphere than what a lot of people have viewed him at in this league.
This answer might be tough for Leaf fans to hear, depending on what you say, but do you think the Boston Bruins are the favorites to land him?
I don't.
That's good.
I would say they might be on the list of possibilities, but from everything that I've heard to this point, I believe the New York Rangers are the front runner for Nazem Kadri. I think the plan is to try and take the money that Ryan Strome was earning, and as much as they've engaged in conversation, to take that and slide that over to Nazem Kadri and have him slot in as the New York Rangers 2C in an ideal world for the next, you know, 7 years, something like that. They're certainly on the list of teams, maybe four or five teams that are going to be trying to do everything they can to get Kadri.
Speaking of that, like the idea of, you know, moving off of Ryan Strome, are there any players like that you have heard right now that the Leafs are targeting in free agency? Or, because I said earlier, it feels like given their cap situation that if they don't make any significant moves, that they're going to have to be more vultures than lions in this. But have you heard of any names that they seem to have circled as we would really like to be in on player X?
I haven't considered it quite like how you presented it, vultures instead of lions, sort of picking at the group that's out there. But it's probably a pretty apt description given just their lack of resources. I mean, they would love to be in the mix for more, but simply don't have the ability. So what they're trying to do is sort of be in a position where they can convince players, hey, with the collection of talent that we have, with the opportunity that we can give you, come here on a short-term deal and earn yourself a larger payday elsewhere and have a chance to chase a Stanley Cup. That's what they can offer with the attention and focus on a player's career that a lot of other players, a lot of other teams that are in the market can't. Because at the end of the day, the cap space is so short to go around throughout the league that really what's being squeezed here are players, you know, sort of in the middle class and below that. It's never been a harder time, I don't think, to hit free agency as a $3 million player. You may have to take less than you want. You may get less term. And the Leafs are probably going to be pitching some players saying, hey, you know, given that circumstance, given that it's not exactly what you want, give us a shot. And I'm sure they're going to have players listening to that.
Last one. Is Malkin really going to play next season in a different uniform?
It sure feels like that right now. I know the Pittsburgh Penguins were absolutely floored on Monday. They're thinking at this point that he's probably gone. My guess is disappointed. They felt like they had done all the right things, and clearly the way that this has dragged out was not appealing to Evgeny Malkin. He wasn't feeling the love. There's been lots of talk in the last 24 hours. Did they or did they not offer a fourth year? I do think they spoke about it in general parameters, but it was something like 4 times $6.1 million, not all that dissimilar to what an AAV that Chris Letang got. He didn't like being second fiddle or second priority. And what I would look for Evgeny Malkin is the potential of a one-year deal for more than that in AAV, a higher AAV to just try it out somewhere. And I really wonder about a team like the Florida Panthers. You know, 1 year, maybe $8 million in total comp, but a lot of it in performance-based bonuses because he's able to do that now being beyond 35, that they could kick their cap problem down the road. I don't know. It sounds like an interesting option to me for someone that lives and trains in Florida on the ultra-exclusive Fisher Island. I don't know. Seemed to be a really good fit.
It makes sense as a Claude Giroux replacement. Frank Cervelli, thanks so much for making time for us today. We always appreciate it, man.
Thank you, guys. Enjoy free agency.
You too, man. That NHL insider and president of hockey content for DailyFaceoff.com, Frank Cervelli, has been brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com.
All I got to say is if you're a parent listening, put your player, your kid, into goaltending because there's not a lot of them and they can make bank. So strap those pads on and become a goalie parent.
And those goalie parents can send the bill for that equipment to at Ailish.
Well, one day it'll be worth it when bottom-dwelling goaltenders are making $4.5 million, all right?
All right. So I think that's where we're at with it is I wonder if the Leafs are going to be willing to package another one of their assets, like if they take a third-round pick like that and whatever else or what other – because like Frank said, there's only a certain cap of assets that teams are going to be willing to give up. But I think I'm more curious about how the secondary trade market shapes up with goaltenders than the free agency market. And I actually do think that there might even be something to be said for the idea of trying to get away – with having Shesterkin as your backup, or sorry, not Shesterkin, that would be great. That would be really great. That would be quite a move.
That would be
as a backup. He's just coming in here. He's willing to.
Rumored JD Bunk is on the Fan Morning Show.
I meant to say Shalgren. But yes, obviously the better goalie came to mind. I think that there's something to be said for trying to bluff that you're willing to start the season with Shalgren as your backup. Because like, what's the point in terms of going up a tier and paying somebody $1 million+ who also stinks, right? Like if you can get into the Samsonovs, then sure. If you can clear some space and that's your priority, I don't mind that. But I do wonder again, like Reimer, Quick, Talbot, those other older guys, whether or not one of those organizations will actually move off of one of those dudes for something else. I think that Quick and Talbot, again, those are two guys that their GMs will probably sit on a little bit longer, and they won't be as desperate. But it does feel like there could at least be teams that could be enticed with an offer to maybe eat a little bit of contract, like maybe eat a little bit of salary on an expiring deal and take one of those guys. I don't know. I'm just BSing, but like, none of the remaining free agents interest me all that much, and I think that Samsonov is, like, the Leafs are going to get priced out on him. That feels like a Buffalo overpays him move 101. Anyway, let's take a break, let's come back, and let's give out more winners. Another couple winners yesterday from you and I. I learned that going with Ailish's mysticism of her birthday picks that I tried to do is not...
That's why I didn't pick it.
That's why...
I didn't feel the vibe, all right?
I trusted my brain... My brain is much better than the mysticism of the 28th birthday thing. First five under hits, Pittsburgh Pirates do not. So thank you to those of you that sent the slips of going with my brain over the 28 pick, which I've received a bunch of today. The Wake and Rake, presented by Unibet, is next.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Wake up!
Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of accuracy.
Show me the money!
With JD, Blake, and Ailish.
JD is muted. Welcome back to the morning show.
To the Fan Morning Show. Blake Murphy.
Oh, boo.
Ailish Farfar, JD Bunkus. Been a while since I had to do that.
Yep. I'm muted because I'm so mad at Ailish that I can barely speak. I can barely
see
straight.
What else is new?
It's hard for me to even process this. This is the Wake and Rake brought to you by Unibet. Crazy about the odds. Thanks to the real
ones. Tell everybody why you're upset, and they can text in and see if I'm justified or not, okay?
Oh, you know, yesterday I gave you all a pick, and I have a lot of receipts of people who sent me the pick, and I have my own gambling receipts as to what I played, and it was my brain, the first five under. I tried to go karma for Ailish, saying, like, hey, it's your birthday, we picked number 28. Made it my pick, made it a loss. It's okay. Like I said, I've been red hot lately. I'm very curious as to, you know, the stats, because I think up until the outage on Friday, where I was bullied into a pick by Ailish,
like
that I didn't have any internet for and couldn't look at. And now Ailish's birthday, I think before that I had won 9 of 11.
Yeah, you were at least 5 of the last 6.
Yes. Yeah.
I have the rose hidden beyond that. But
yeah, it was red hot, and Ailish just derailed me with her bullying and with her,
I'm just being honest to our loyal listeners.
It's okay. It's bullying.
The most Ailish thing imaginable is nudging you toward making a pick for her birthday yesterday.
He was the one that brought it up, Blake. You weren't listening. I didn't have a number-related pick, and he was like, oh, I want to do a number-related pick for you. And so he quickly scanned the lines, I'll say that, and didn't put a lot of thought into it, and threw out, oh, this pitcher wears number 28.
Anyway, I was bullied.
So I understand. Yeah, bullying, I didn't even
hashtag
ask you to
end
do
bullying
that.
Hashtag yeah. No more bullying hashtag
sure.
Bully the bullies hashtag if you like Ailish, it's just like you're a jock and you bully me, and that's how you derailed my Wake and Rake glory.
Everybody will perspective.
Little emo kid JD, little drama kid Blake, and big bully Ailish.
Old bully Ailish is bullying us around, and it is what it is.
Right.
But, like, people know. People know what's going on. People know the score here. Anyways.
So, hang on. So, Ailish, your thing won yesterday, though, right? The Rangers.
That's correct.
Athletics.
Big bully won. Yeah.
I'm just thinking. I was like okay, like, Seager hits that home run to, like, push the over. It's set. I was a little surprised you guys didn't do anything 7-11 related. Also,
he yelled at me, being like, "You didn't do your homework," and I was like, "I just didn't feel the number vibe yesterday." Okay,
anyway,
correct.
Good opportunity to like whoever hit the hit that pushed the over, like just call him the big gulp from now on or something like that.
Yeah, it's a good one.
You guys, I missed two shows, and you guys are at each other so much.
I got bullied. I'm just standing
like
up for myself.
High school, as my parents are going through a divorce.
If you're getting bullied out there like me, if you're getting bullied, you know, stand up for yourself. Don't
it gets better.
Don't, Don't let the bullies win, guys. I'm here to stand up for anti-bullying campaign against Ailish Forfar, who bullied me on Friday. And there was no internet, so no one could see it. You know, it was hidden. She was basically hitting me with a phone book, punching me with the phone book so that it didn't leave any bruises. And that's fine.
Oranges.
And then, yeah, then Monday, you know, is take my winning pick and spit all over it, Max Scherzer. It's I gave out the Max Scherzer pick on another show as well, so I feel a little bit more justified. I didn't go with your birthday pick on another show, so thanks to those who sent the receipts.
My birthday is canceled.
Honestly, thank goodness. You know, but then you get to stay 28 forever, which is, I think, 28 is in the conversation for best ages.
Wow, really?
Yeah, 28 is elite age.
I came into it being like, I don't even, like, is it, who cares?
No. 28 is elite. You got a little bit of money cooking. You know who you are a little bit more. Your group of friends all haven't moved out to the suburbs yet and decided to, like, you know, plop out multiple children and then only invite you over to their places and be like, you should come to our renovated basement in Pickering. Like, no.
Look at the baby.
No,
look,
Scott.
At the baby.
Yeah, like, exactly. Come check out this baby and then leave at a very early time. No, it sounds awful. It is awful. Did you guys see that post that was flying around the other day that was like, I think it was like 35 in the city is 27 or 35 in the city is 27 in real life and 27 in the suburbs is 35. And I was like, it's true. It's very, very true. So yeah, 28, got a little money. Your group of friends is tight. You've still got people that are in the city, or you've still got a group of friends that all haven't, like, had kids or started to move on to that phase of their lives. And yeah, you're not over 30s yet. You're still, like, you can date, like, a wide spectrum. It's just a good age. I think 28 is if I had to do power rankings of ages, 28 would be very high.
And you survived the 27 club, right?
Yeah, you didn't die at 27.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I didn't think about that, but sure. You think you're famous enough to be a part of the 27 club, dog?
You thought that? Like, you made it. And I was like, what? And then I looked.
Celebrities who died at 27 and Ailish.
Yeah, and
I don't think it's even the celebrity thing. I think it's just like that's a weird trend that happens to people. Anyway.
All I got to say is
good.
Further evidence of bully mentality, but thinking of yourself so highly that you put yourself into the same category.
364 days till we have to talk about this again. Yeah. I do have a betting story for you, though.
What's your betting story?
Well, it's not a personal one, but it's one that the listeners will be happy to hear. So what do you think the MLB's most profitable team is as of today?
As in the most profitable team to bet on? The Yankees.
Baltimore Orioles.
No, it is Baltimore Orioles.
What?
You got to think most overperforming team, right? And team that doesn't have a lot of big market juice behind it.
Sorry, I thought you meant like who are people making the most money off of this year?
Yes,
that's it?
That's it.
Yeah, because the Orioles would be an underdog in every game. They're the anti-Jays.
No, that makes sense. I would have just thought there's so many more people that bet the Yankees that it's like, considering their record and the amount of people that bet them.
How much money you're winning. So someone that bets $100 on the money line this year would have made $1,400 on the Orioles this season.
Yeah, we're talking about slightly different things in terms of my
interpretation. Yeah, you're going gross and she's going ROI.
Yeah. ROI. I got it.
Anyway, that was it. I just thought that was an interesting tidbit. You know, who is the most profitable team in MLB? Maybe that factors into my Wake and Rake pick today.
Okay.
Well, I'll tell you what. It certainly factors into how badly I feel about the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Now the Orioles are right behind them, nipping at the tails.
So we don't have a lineup for the Jays yet because we don't know who the Jays pitcher is going to be. I got to tell you, I'm breaking out I don't do this very often. This is a must-win night for the Toronto Blue Jays. Like, this is you got to get off on the right foot. Like, yeah, sure, could you win the next five games or could you win the next four or five? Sure, but this feels like a must-win. Your bullpen is rested. If you don't throw Gausman, it feels like what Berríos goes today, right?
No, I think I don't think with Berríos you would shotgun him. Like, he's a starter, a career starter. He can't start on short notice. Like, you're going bullpen day again today.
Okay, so that's a nightmare if he can't go today, because I don't even know, like, what does that bullpen day even look like?
Well, you know what it looks like. You just saw it the other day. It's
well, no, because it's not Castillo that starts, and there's no way they can start Banda.
But you saw it the other day with Banda and Casey Lawrence and stuff, and it's not great. The one saving grace they'll have here is like they're back home, so Buffalo's close, or Iowa's not that far. I think Buffalo's in Iowa right now, and you only have six games to get through. So if you have to do well, we send a guy down and he's ineligible to be called back up for 10 days. Like, you're a little more okay with that. But, yeah, you've got eight bullpen arms right now. Nobody pitched yesterday, but you saw what that looks like. It's not good. And Casey Lawrence isn't there. Like, your long man would almost have to be Banda and Trevor Richards, and Richards hasn't started in a couple years.
So they can't make a roster move and call Trent Thornton back up today?
I don't know if Thornton's 10 days have passed. I don't think they have.
Yeah, that's what I was asking. Because...
So unless someone hits the IL... Thornton got sent down on the 6th, so he's got
he can
come back on the weekend, but
he's out today. So today basically what we're staring down the barrel of is it's either Kevin Gausman, the Fangraphs leader in WAR, or Casey Lawrence.
No, Casey Lawrence got option too. He can't come back up either. That's what I'm saying.
Oh my God.
It's Banda and Trevor Richards.
Why did Banda survive that outing?
maybe you call Thomas Hatch back up.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay, so today's options for the Blue Jays in what JD is dubbing a must-win game.
Small positive, the Phillies, because they have an army of guys who won't get vaccinated. Also a bullpen day. Andrew Bellotti is going to start. He's an opener. He hasn't started since 2015. He hasn't gone more than four outs this season. He's having a pretty good year, but like
I was just going to say, though, but he's been good.
He has been good, but he's not going to go long. They're going to go... him for an inning or two, and then they're going to get into their bullpen as well. And they're coming in pretty rested too. Like only one guy in their bullpen pitch yesterday. Maybe they make some roster moves and stuff like that, or let Mark Appel go a couple innings. But yeah, it could be bullpen day versus bullpen day. Get those overs.
Sounds like an over.
Boy, I hope Kevin Gausman pitches. Let's just put it that way. But I would say this, too, that it scares me a little bit that Gausman was supposed to pitch just a couple of days ago, or that they had hoped that he'd be able to pitch on Sunday, and that if he didn't go, that they would think that there would be a material change between now and Tuesday. That would lead me to believe that they are going to play this a little bit more carefully, and as they should, because here's the thing. I'm saying it's a must-win game for the Jays, which I do believe. Like, they need to win tonight. They need to change the narrative. They need to get some positivity within that ball club. They need to have at least the possibility of rolling through these next six games, which are all very winnable against teams that they should beat. Again, considering where the Phillies are at, with the amount of players that they can bring up here and where they line up in their rotation, the Jays should be favorites, or at least close to it, in every single one of these games. If they don't win 4 of 2, it's a disaster. Like, it is. They go into the All-Star break 3-3. Again, I think that they will probably very much be discussing the removal of Charlie Montoyo as manager. And I don't think it's going to really change the way that they approach the trade deadline, because it seems pretty clear and obvious like what they are doing. But I don't like working from positions of desperation. And we talked about this all day long with Kyle Dubas, right? It's like you put yourself in a position where you needed to go out and acquire Matt Murray, and that Matt Murray was like the sensible move. And I really don't like the idea of the Blue Jays being 3-3 heading into this break, being outside of a playoff position, and feeling like they need to either add a little bit of desperation or having the way that they approach this change in some form of fashion. I really do believe in momentum, not series to series, not day to day, but I think a dark cloud can follow you around. I think positive vibes can follow you around with a baseball team, and like these guys need a win right now. So I hope Gausman goes, but I also think that there's no way that, given their starting rotation depth, that they will put him at any risk of being in discomfort or re-aggravation of an injury.
Yeah, and so a listener, Mark, tweeted in that like Berríos would be on regular rest today, which is true, but it's more about like, do you have him go through his entire starting routine to get ready, and then if you don't need him, he's got to go through that again tomorrow.
I would just start him and then have Gausman go later. Like, I that's why I thought it was Berríos, to be honest.
Well, what they're thinking is if Gausman can go today, you get two starts out of him during this six-game stretch.
But that's what I'm saying here is that, just get two starts out of Jose Berríos.
Yeah, like, and it start certainly Berríos didn't today. Sound Sunday like there was a ton of optimism about Gausman going today. So maybe Berríos does go. I'm just saying you got to make that decision very early.
I would be making it right now if I'm the Toronto Blue Jays. I would be saying we're going with Berríos twice, and we're going to give Gausman a little bit more reprieve, and we're going to try to make sure that he feels as good as possible heading into this sucker, because we're not putting the Fangraphs war leader on a bad foot, and we don't want him out there worrying about discomfort, and we certainly do not want a re-aggravation of an injury that would actually result in Casey Lawrence or Thomas Hatch being a part of this rotation, or Yusei Kikuchi. You know, like, that's the other part of this. I will say this, Blake.
You only want Alek Manoah pitching, is basically. Can he throw the next six games?
No, I want Berríos pitching. I still believe Berríos will normalize a little bit here. And I was actually pretty encouraged talking to John Morosi today, Blake. He mentioned that he believes the Blue Jays will be in the second tier of starting pitcher market, whether that's a Martin Perez, whether that's a Chad Kuhl. I can't remember the third name. Yes, that was it. Quintana was the third name. Those are the three names that he kind of linked that the Jays will be hovering around. And I was like, you know what? I would be very interested in all three of those names. And so, yeah, I was kind of surprised because I thought the Jays would be probably even going like further down the ladder than that. All right. Yeah, we can't make any Blue Jays picks right now, but I will say that if Gausman or Berríos is pitching today, I will be betting the Blue Jays. It'll be a rare day where I make a Blue Jays bet because I really think that they need this one. Like, I really do. And I cannot imagine a bullpen game against Philadelphia with six games left not being just immensely important for these guys and way more important than Philly. Like, they got to lock in. They got to get a win.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah. And if it isn't Berríos or Gausman, then I'll be betting the over significantly because of these bullpen day between both teams. Not the most.
If it's Bonda, I will be hammering the over. And my last bet, which was a run to be scored in the first inning when it was Bonda. And yeah, so.
Is it Bonda or Banda? Like,
I thought it was Banda, but I trust Blake.
Bonda. Blake said Bonda. Yeah. Okay, so it's
Bonda, don't you want
that? I'm going off of whatever Dan Schulman says, and Schulman's been saying Bonda. So.
Yeah, all right.
He did correct us on Moreno, so he knows.
Yes.
Yeah, Moreno.
Wonderful.
All right.
Okay, well, I'll get going on mine. So sure, I'm going to go with the Baltimore Orioles on the money line. When I logged in this morning, they were plus 150, and they're now minus 103 because everybody knows now that they're the most profitable team in baseball, as they announced. The line has moved significantly. The Cubs are starting a pitcher with not much information on. He hasn't played much. Adrian Sampson. And the Baltimore Orioles are starting Jordan Lyles. I think that they've been super hot. We know that. I think they're going for their ninth win in a row, the Orioles. And I read that article, and I'm sold on it. I think that I'm going to keep riding the money streak until it's not hot, and we've talked about that before. So going to go with Orioles on the money line. This is the first game of their series, so might come out hot. Get that
Adrian
Sampson,
by the way, I picked on last week, and it worked out well. So
perfect. I like that. Let's keep the Sampson hatred on this
I
show.
Will say this, that the only reason I don't like this bet is from a, like, do I really want the potential of, what are the Orioles back at the Jays right now, 2.5?
It's close.
Like, I really don't like the potential of a Jays loss with...
You know what I've done?
Every time
that you say that you don't like my bet, it wins. I've been calculating this in a separate notes tab. When you go, I don't know, like, yeah, I don't know, or you have some sort of pushback, it wins. So I'm just saying that that has been a very positive trend in our
JD, I cannot verify this in my spreadsheet.
I know, and nor can
saying.
I verify this. Again, like,
well,
Ailish, the bully.
Trend.
Like, this is... Yeah.
Screw you, JD.
Yeah, exactly. Just like,
all right, that's my pick.
All right.
Let's go, Orioles.
Oof. Let's go Orioles. I got to tell you, you know what sucks? I kind of like the Orioles. Like, I just have a little confession of...
They're
likable.
They're fun.
I know. They're good and fun and likable, and they were such underdogs, and it's just like they're in this division where all four of the teams were supposed to be the Ailish bully teams, and they're like the Mies who are just, you know, I relate to them is what I'm saying.
And they have the perfect mix of, like, young guys who are going to be really good and, like, overperforming jabronis.
Yep, exactly.
That just, like, I mean... Honestly, I was talking about this on Jays Talk Plus recently, and like, their front office has to be like a little bit ticked off because this is supposed to be one more year they could sell. Like, Trey Mancini and Ryan Mountcastle are like supposed to be big trade assets on this market, and maybe not Mountcastle, he's a little younger, but like Mancini you could get something for. They've got an army of bullpen guys that you could get assets for, and now, like, your fan base would not be happy if you're two games out of a playoff spot and you start selling.
I totally agree. And they're definitely not. I don't think they're selling. I don't think that they're necessarily. I don't think that they're buying either. Maybe they sell.
No, you
a
ride it out, right? You tell, you ride okay, it. You guys all, earned that. We're not going to pull from this.
It's all house money. It's absolutely all house money. I'm going to. I've got a couple. Like again, today's slate is not one I'm really in love with. It's a lot of pitchers that I don't really have any feel for. Like if you look around the slate, it's a bad pitching day, which I think really affects predictability even when taking money lines. So I am going to have to go with the tried, tested, and true here and lay the 1.5 runs with the New York Yankees. It's not the most profitable line. I think I saw it at -140-something, 142.
148.
Yeah, so -148 for the Yankees laying a 1.5 today because it's just – it's Garrett Cole versus Graham Ashcraft. It's a good team versus a bad team. I just would anticipate if I'm looking at any level of predictability, it's the good team beating the crap out of the bad team. And, yeah, Garrett Cole, who is one of the best starting pitchers still in baseball, beating Graham Ashcraft. So I'm going to stick with that. I thought about doing a first 500 with the Rays and Red Sox because Kluber's had a pretty good track record against the best Red Sox hitters, but I don't know what we're going to get out of Chris Sale. So, yeah, I'm going to stay away from that.
Yeah, who knows what locker room he destroys in a fit of rage or something like that this time out. Okay, I just wanted to mention, this is not my pick, but the Raptors are -4. Against the Bulls in summer league action.
Whoa!
On the money
Raptors
line.
Summer league. Is Scotty playing?
No.
What do you think of so. Richard Jefferson becoming a one quarter
ref? I forgot to ask you.
I don't know. It was kind of fine. Mostly I was man, he's still in really good shape.
Ailish cried about
it. If they did it in an actual game, it would be a farce. But it's summer league.
Ailish had the ultimate
sudden
hockey
death
guy
overtime.
Take.
If you go to a second overtime in summer league,
which I think is awesome. That's cool.
Yeah, and you get 10 fouls before you foul out. It's amazing. Yeah. The main summer league thing, like the most, and I've been to a lot of summer leagues, so I this is like we're too early in summer league still, but the betting lines or like the market will be slow to catch up to. All the teams are going to start resting their hotshot rookies soon. Like, they just won't play guys 4 or 5 games, and the lines won't catch up to that. So you just, like, bang any underdog the last couple days of summer league. My pick today, though.
All right. That's a nice tidbit. If I get that wrong, though, Blake, I'm going to sue you. So just, like, betting on summer league.
Blake's bullying you.
No, I'm just saying, like, I've bet on NFL preseason football before under this premise where I always bet underdogs. And when you lose an NFL preseason football bet, like, that's the lowest you can feel as an individual. Anyway, come on, Blake. What's your pick?
I'm going with Braves -0.5 on the 5-inning line. Okay. Spencer Strider. I wanted to go Spencer Strider strikeouts. It's not up yet. He's striking out 14 per 9.
102 strikeouts this season.
Yeah. You could also just play the under 4.5 here, but I have a little less confidence in Peterson on the Mets side, and the Braves offense has been really good the last 30, whereas the Mets
best
have been
baseball.
Exactly league average. I'm just a big Spencer Strider guy, and with no pitching props up, to give up the half run on the 5-inning line feels right here.
I absolutely.
That was -134, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I love that name, Spencer Strider, so much.
Oh, yeah.
It's a really, really, really good name. All right, that's your Wake and Rake for today. Ailish riding the Baltimore Orioles.
You know what? The Orioles have now become plus money, so you're welcome. Let's get profitable on the most profitable
baseball. Let's go. Let's continue to make those profits. Let's continue
bet
to
now.
I'm on the Yankees and Garrett Cole -1.5, and Blake Murphy is on the winning first 5 innings for the Atlanta Braves with Spencer Strider.
+488 today.
All right, let's go. That's your Wake and Rake for today. We will catch you tomorrow where we will speak with Elliot Friedman on the day of free agency. Oh, boy.
Bum, bum, bum.
All right, Leafies, do something. It's the Fan Morning Show. JD, Blake, and Ailish, Sports 5 Night of the Fan.